where Jesus gets arrested tonight. So that's the title of the thing, is he gets arrested by his enemies. We're going to pick up in Mark 14, and we're going to read 32 through 36. Those are the first ones we're going to read. So someone can get to Mark 14, and 32 through 36 is where we want to read, start off with.
And they came to a place which was named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." And he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch." He went a little farther and fell on the ground and prayed that, if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will."
All right, so we got this. You get this picture where Jesus now is going and praying in the garden of Gethsemane, the olive grove. I found it interesting at the Joe's funeral last weekend, the funeral director brought some olive oil that he got from a friend who went to Israel, and it was called the Garden of Olives, where this came from, this oil. I thought, oh, I was sitting there thinking, I wonder if that's part of this lesson tonight. I don't know. He brought it back. I just had to think about that. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool to be able to have something like that. But so you have this, and he's going, here's kind of a picture. Gethsemane would be outside the city, so you can kind of get a picture here of where the city of they were at. They would go out and head out towards the garden there. So it's a garden outside the city. And what else stands out to you in these verses before I go on a little bit further? When you see what's going on?
Jesus knew what he had to go through, but he was also part man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was very troubled in his spirit, extremely. Just translation here says, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death." In other words, he's experiencing stuff like we experience. You know, when we get into an emotional or there's a deep burden or a problem that we're dealing with, and we get. It comes from inside of us, and it just deeply troubles our spirit, our soul. Jesus is experiencing that. Why would Jesus? We know why Jesus. I'm going to ask you the question, but you know, why Jesus knows this because he's God, right? He's God's Son. That's why he knows he's going to go into this dark hour. With that thought, why would Jesus be afraid or upset or? To face these terrible things knowing he's God's Son. I mean, or he's God. Why would you think that he would be distressed about it?
He still has to go through it as a man, like feeling the pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, he's still a man. He's a man in the flesh. Even though he's God's Son, he's still a man in the flesh. So, I mean, anybody here ever shoot themselves with a nail gun? Okay. Yeah, Paul shaking his head. Yeah. What does it feel like, Paul? It hurts. Anybody smash your finger with a hammer? Okay, everybody's done that pretty much a time or two, right? You're putting something on the wall or, you know, you're doing something and you smash your thumb. It hurts. This was going to hurt Jesus. Physically, there's also an emotional or a spiritual sense of hurt, pain, because now he's separated from all these guys and people that he's been ministering to for the last 3 years that have walked with him. There's a dreamy thing. So even though he is God, He's also man. And so the things that we deal with, his body is going to feel. But he also knew that it was going to be his time for betrayal. He knows that because he says, a little further, he tells them, stay here and keep watch with me. He knows he's going into this thing. And then he says to them, and his first part of his prayer, he says, Abba Father, which in other words is like a child or someone saying daddy or dad. That's how we would associate that today. So a little child coming up, running and grabbing the pant leg of a dad saying, dad, dad, dad. That's what he's doing. He's crying out and he's saying, hey, Abba Father. It's a very appropriate cry to his father. Then he said, everything is possible. And then he says, please take this cup of suffering away from me. That's what his question is, or his thing is, his plea. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Now, some translations will say, please take this cup of wrath. Is that how most of the translations read here? You guys are reading?
Mine
does. Yours does?
No, it doesn't.
It says that cup of suffering.
It just says, take away this cup from me.
Take away this cup from me. Okay. And maybe it's not this passage. Let me read a little bit further here just real quick and see. It might be one of the other Gospels that mentions this is a cup of wrath. But we'll come back to that. So let's read 37 through 42.
And he cometh and findeth them sleeping, and saith unto Peter, Simon, sleepest thou? Couldest thou not watch 1 hour? Watch ye and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. The spirit truly is ready, but the flesh is weak. And again he went away and prayed, and spake the same words. And when he returned, he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy, neither wist they would to answer him. And he cometh the third time and saith unto them, sleep on now and take your rest. It is enough. The hour is come. Behold, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise up. Let us go. Lo, he that betrayeth me is at hand.
All right. So you got this picture. You get this picture of Jesus. He goes, prays to the Father. And it's an hour-long prayer. It says, what did he say? Can't you not wait for me with 1 hour? Right? So we know it's at least 1 hour worth of praying. That's how long he was praying and talking to his father. So he's there for at least an hour, maybe longer, but he's saying, could you not watch with me for 1 hour? You have to assume that it's an hour. He then says to them, keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. Why would he say that? I mean, then he makes a comment, for the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. What would be some of the possible temptations that would come? Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. By the way, the book doesn't have anything on that, so right. I'm asking that question myself. So I don't know that I'll have an actual answer for us to think about. But just think about that. I mean, for a minute, wait a minute. They don't have. You got to understand. They didn't have TVs to keep them from occupied. Okay, so
maybe the surrounding areas, the people in the surrounding areas, might be tempting them or something.
Okay. Okay, I would agree with that because of the next phrase that he says there, for the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. You know, how many times have you ever felt like, oh, I need to spend some time praying or reading my Bible or spending time with God, but you're so tired. Your body is just so tired and you're just exhausted and you fall asleep. You long to do that. But
yeah, I guess that's what they worked hard, I guess, because he slept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were tired. These guys were tired. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it because our lesson doesn't talk about it, but there is something to that. Jesus specifically told them, keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. There is something in that passage or in that phrase there that when Jesus says that, that gives us an indication or an insight into how we can defeat temptation. So when temptation comes our way, there is a power in, okay, praying. There is a power in not just falling asleep and going on about it. There's a key into that part about that, and we're not going to spend time on it, but just wanted to throw that out there. What else did he say? Then Jesus leaves, goes and prays again, and he returns to them again. Again, how long did he pray this time? Was it another hour? Was it a half hour? We don't know. But he's there and he prays. And then he comes back, and what's he find him?
Sleeping again.
And it says because they couldn't keep their eyes open. They didn't know what to say. Their response, Jesus comes back to him, basically asks the same question again. What in the world? He's asking them, what in the world? And then when he returned to them the third time, he said, go ahead and sleep, have your rest. The time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hand of sinners. And then he pretty much, I don't know if he yelled, but he in the expression here, it's the way it's written here, it says, look, my betrayer is here, exclamation point. So he's basically letting, now imagine yourself sleeping, and someone comes running into the room. If you've ever been in the military or watched any movies at the military basic training, and you're sleeping, sound asleep, and the drill sergeant runs into the room yelling, get up, get up, get up, or you might come over to your bed and dump it over. I get this picture that Jesus comes to the disciples and he shouts a little bit. Look, my betrayer's here. And everybody is just, okay, now what happens when you're asleep and you wake right up?
It happens in the car. In the one verse in the beginning, he says, sleep on now, take your rest. And then the next thing, he's like, get up and come with me.
Right. Yeah, immediately. He's like getting them up. Now, what happens when you wake up, though, right away? Does everybody get up in the morning and you get out of bed and you, alarm clock goes off, you hit the button to stop it, and you sit right up in bed and you jump out, and now you're ready to go a mile a minute? No, you're a little sluggish, right? Your body is still sore and stiff, or in my case, sometimes my feet still hurt. I haven't, you know, and I get out of bed and, your body's just not, your muscles have been relaxed and they're just now getting up. Imagine these guys getting up off the ground and having that same approach. It's just a different picture here. All right, let's read 43 through 47, and let's see what happens here. May go back to that question about not giving to temptation a little bit.
And immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude with swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. Now his betrayer had given them a signal saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him and lead him away safely. As soon as he had come, immediately he went up to him and said to him, Rabbi, Rabbi, and kissed him. Then they laid their hands on him and took him.
Do you read verse 47 yet?
And one of those who stood by drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear.
Oh my goodness. All right, so you have this thing, and we know later from another passage that it was Peter who cut off the ear. So here Peter was one of the men, right, that was supposed to stay awake, right, with Jesus. Okay, so you have this picture. Judas comes with a group of men, group of soldiers with their swords and clubs, and it says a crowd of men armed. I don't know how many people were there, but it was just a larger group of people, and they get it. And who was leading them, by the way?
Satan
was. Yeah, Satan was the one who was leading them. We know that by now. Anytime anybody's going after Jesus, it's led by Satan, right? It's nobody else. That's who's causing it. It says they go there and they were sent by the leading priest or the high priest, the teachers of religious law, the elders. Judas then tells them, how was he going to let them know who Jesus was? Okay, now I got to stop right there. Why would nobody not know who Jesus is? We just saw this. Jesus just walked into the, or rode the donkey into the town where they were at. So on that picture there, he's riding in. I don't know which road it was, but he goes into the town.
It's dark.
Might be a little hard to tell who it is. Right. They didn't want to grab the wrong guy.
Right.
Now, so Judas, I mean, this is just a little odd. And of course, now maybe not all the soldiers know. They may have heard about Jesus, but may have never seen him. It's not like we had television that, you know, they could plaster his wanted picture all around, you know. They didn't have that. But you have this thing where he says, I'm going to let you know by a kiss. Well, in their culture, you would greet your friend or someone with a kiss. They would do that. And in the Arab culture, they still do that today. The Jewish culture still does that. And so there is a thing, but I'm not sure about the betrayal part, but it'd be a really good, was the kiss cultural?
I am kind of surprised at Peter being armed with a sword, though. I thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, I mean, do you think that all these people, people coming to get Jesus, do you think they knew they were being controlled by Satan?
No.
No, they were responding to what the high priest said to do, right? This is our job. We're just going to do it. I don't think they were. They probably weren't. I don't think they were. Let's put it this way. Well, let me ask this question. Because Jesus is greater than all his enemies, when we know that already, he's healed the sick, he cast out demons and all, why would he allow himself to be taken prisoner?
He
knew it was God's plan. Yeah. It's part of what God had ordained. It was part of the plan that God had said, and this he was going to fulfill it, because he said earlier in this prayer, okay, I don't want this to happen. If it can happen, take it away from me, yet I don't want this to happen, so I want your will done, not mine. So he was fulfilling his Father's will. Okay? So we have this picture of that. Now, the lesson here doesn't really dig into with Peter or the, and here it doesn't say his name, but we know from other scriptures that it's Peter who cuts off his ear. Your question, Scott, was that, you're surprised he had a sword. Why are you surprised he had a sword?
I mean, that would kind of go against what Jesus preaches against, peace and love and,
Yeah.
Harmony with others.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you feel the need to arm yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why would you need to feel the need to arm? Huh?
Everybody needs a bodyguard. I'm sure there was a couple of them that had swords, just in case, because they went out dealing with all those crazy people.
So they would have figured they needed a sword. Well, wait a minute. Now, Jesus wasn't afraid of nothing.
Right.
I mean,
he was
strong enough to... I mean, he went right up against the man who would snap chains. Nobody else in the town would. The guy with Legion, who had all the demons in him,
right.
He went right up against him. He wasn't afraid of that.
Yeah, but he didn't have a sword. The disciples had it.
But they didn't cut his ears off or go right up against him. We're going to read here what Jesus says about this, but think about this, that here these guys are. So... did they, at this point, did Peter and them really understand what was happening? Did they really understand? I don't think they did at this point.
What did Peter into, at some point, he's referred to as the devil, right? Mm-hmm. So wasn't he...
Yeah, Yeah, there was a one of those guys on their team, on the disciples' team, the apostles, was a what they called a zealot. So they would have been part of a group, a sect of people that were against the Romans.
They were underground.
Yeah, they would have been violent.
So wouldn't they have probably always been looking over their shoulder to make sure that they would be for themselves, not for Jesus, but for themselves?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. To a certain extent, maybe he was going to try to protect Jesus.
Okay.
So maybe he didn't understand what was happening at this point, was that Jesus was going to die and all that, or the significance of all that, but maybe he understood that maybe this was the time that they were going to try to
take him out. Mm-hmm. Could be. That could very well be the case. Go back to that verse, though, where it says, keep watch so you will not give in to temptation. What temptation did Peter give into at that moment?
The impulse to hurt somebody.
I mean, let's put it this way. Let me ask you, if you come out of a wonderful prayer meeting with God, where the love of God, where you've experienced God's love so much, you're in prayer meeting. Let's say we're all gathered in here for prayer, church, or we're gathering for prayer. And all of a sudden, somebody comes up and just hauls off and swings at you for whatever reason. Are you apt to go back and swing back right away because you just come out of the presence of God or spending time with Him? Or if you have been sitting back watching a shoot 'em up movie or something like that, and then someone comes and takes a swing at you, what do you think you're going to be more apt to? I'm trying to get us to think that when you are in communion with God or you're spending time with God, you're not going to be as apt to quickly. Maybe I'm wrong with that.
Even let's not do stuff.
Even somebody saying a remark to you that was unkind.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not walking in the Spirit, if you're not spending that time with God, for me, I snap back in an instant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to do those kind of things when you haven't spent time with God. And prayer is spending time with God. You can let your imagination go. You can spend time with God in the Word in the morning and be like, wow, what a wonderful thing. Or you spend time talking with God and then you get in your car and the person cuts you off. You might not make such a big deal about it. But when you have kept yourself from spending time with God, you're more apt to get riled up right away and yell at them or honk the horn and just, you know, let them have it. There is that. So, yeah, spending time with God changes the way we respond to situations. And so Peter could have been all these thoughts, hey, they're going to kill Jesus, did not spend time praying like God or like Jesus was asking him to do, and immediately, and Jesus would have known Peter was going to cut this guy's ear off, right? He knew that. So he was telling it. I think it's who he said to Peter. He said to Simon Peter, Simon, are you asleep? Could you not watch? He spoke directly to Peter. I mean, yeah, the other guys were there, but he spoke it. He lists Peter's name here. And I think that's partly because he knew what was going to happen. Well, let's see what Jesus then says to them, to the rest of them, 48 through 49.
Am I leading a rebellion, said Jesus, that you have come out with your swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I was with you, teaching in the temple courts, and you did not arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled.
Okay, so Jesus turns to the crowd, and he says, ask him a question. Do you think I'm about here leading a rebellion? Are you coming at me with some? You think you got to come to get me with clubs and swords? Have you ever seen me do anything to harm people? No. Basically, but he also then reiterates that what is this a fulfillment of? A prophecy that hey, this is going to happen. So we have this thing.
When it says like a sheep led to the slaughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zechariah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have this whole thing here. Let's keep in this story here, in this passage, in this gospel, Mark does not give us the side where Jesus bends over, picks up the man's ear, puts it back on, and heals it immediately. Now, I don't know about you, but if I just had my ear cut off and it's laying there on the ground, and it's probably screaming at the top of my lungs as a person. I don't know. That's how I would picture myself. My ear is missing. It's laying on the ground. And Jesus picks it up, and he puts it back on and calmly turns to Peter and them and says, we had this happen. A lady fell at work yesterday in the parking lot. Nobody saw her fall. She was probably, I'm guessing, close to her 80s. And she was there with her nephew, and she fell over. After we were all said and done, we went out, and the ambulance came and took her, and she was doing okay. But they were there afterwards. I met with one of the other leaders there, and I said, "How did you feel about that situation?" He said, "Well, I froze up. I locked up. I didn't know what to do. He wasn't used to the situation." And you imagine Jesus with 30 people around to see this man get his ear cut off. Jesus did not get yelling and screaming. He bends over, picks it up, and the Bible says he puts it back on, heals him, and as he's healing him, he turns to Peter and says something, "Put away your sword. If my kingdom were of this world, I would have fight, but my kingdom's not of this world." And so Mark doesn't give us that picture here, but you can read the other Gospels and you'll see some of that. It's not this rah, rah, right. No, he's Jesus is just, hey, letting him know, hey, it's okay, Peter. We're good, man. We got this.
Imagine the guy. The guy goes to arrest him, and he puts his ear back on. And
do you think that man's going to go back and serve? I don't know if that man, I mean, if it were me, I'd be like, following this guy. I'm following Jesus, man. This guy's got it together. I mean, there ain't nobody else. We don't know what happened to that man. There's a whole sermon right in that one. We don't know what happens to that man. When God does something good for you, you don't always know what's going to happen to those people he does good for. Not everybody will follow him, but we don't know. This untold stories of people's lives. But that's...
So does Satan know this story too? I mean, about the scripture being fulfilled and it's being done?
Oh yeah. He knows it. Yeah, Satan knows that. He knows this. Well, Satan probably knows the scripture better than we do.
Right.
Although
he
likes to twist it
at the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As it's happening.
Oh, as it's happening? Oh, I believe so. Yes. Satan knows it's happening. Yeah. That's why he's trying to. He's trying to defeat. That's why he tried to get Jesus to yield to the temptations. Because he knew if Jesus would do that as a man, if he would yield to temptation, he had beat God. He got beat. But thank goodness Jesus didn't give in. Well, let's read 50 through 52. Oops, wrong one.
Then they all forsook him and fled. Now a certain young man followed him, having a living cloth thrown around his naked body. And the young man laid hold of him, and he let the living cloth and fled from them naked.
Wow. What throws this little part in here. Mark throws this in there. Then all his disciples, they stayed there and they were doing like we would do today if someone came to arrest somebody here. We might be, that's what happens today when someone comes to arrest. Today when you have something happen, the police come up and they go to arrest somebody and there's a group of people around, what do we do? What do people do? Hey, you can't do that. Come on. You know, get off. And they all join on side for the person who's being arrested a lot of times, right? Unless they are totally against that person. But that's what happens. We all rise up and we defend. These guys didn't do that. They took off and ran like scared chickens. You know, they were... and they're gone. I mean, they're out of the way. Except for one young man, it says. They grabbed him. And when they went to grab him, when the mob tried to grab him, he slipped out and ran away. What does that remind you of? A story in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, there was a young man who ran away. It was way back in the early lessons.
Joseph.
Joseph did, yeah. Reminds you of the story of Joseph a little bit there. You know, he was being the Potiphar's wife was trying to get him to sleep with her, and he took off and ran. And that's what happened. But do you have this story? I don't know why they put this in there. Why did God have this one verse put in there? I don't know, but there's a reason why. I don't recall this being mentioned in the other Gospels, this one verse. But there's a reason it's in here. I don't know who the young man was. Could have been Mark. Could Mark be writing this down about himself? I might have been the one guy. Mark was not... I'm going to say this, and I'm probably wrong on this, but I don't believe Mark... I don't think Mark was one of the apostles. If I'm right on that, I'll double check that before we leave here. I don't think Mark was one of the apostles, one of the disciples, the 12 that were selected.
Oh, he wasn't one of the 12.
Right. I don't think he was.
I just taught that lesson. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for backing me up on that, Barbara, because I didn't think he was one of the 12 disciples. Yet he wrote the Gospel of Mark, the life of Jesus. Could be very possible that he might have been that young fella that was following along. I don't know. And he didn't want to name himself in the thing. I, Mark. Anyway, I don't know. It just says young fella. Supposing. I don't know. But God put it in there for a reason. God put it in for a reason. Yeah. So you have this. They were disabused. They were disappointed. They ran away. They were overwhelmed. They had believed that Jesus was never going to get caught. They were thinking he was going to deliver them from the Jewish, the Romans, and he was going to be their next king. And so now he's being arrested. What in the world? 53 through 54. Mm-hmm. So we have this thing here. Now they take Jesus to the high priest's home or his place of living, and all the leading elders of the land were coming, and the teachers. They had all the religious laws. So the religious laws, that would have been the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes, right? Those were the leaders that they were there, and they got a big meeting together, and it says that Peter went and stayed at a distance and went right into the high priest's courtyard. And he stands there or sits down and starts warming himself with all the guards. Yeah.
So this is pretty late at night.
Yeah, it's... You got to figure, they left after they had their meal. So, you know, the meal was at sundown. They had their meal. So you got to figure this is probably... It's going to get closer. It's probably closer towards your 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning time frame, because during this whole time, remember Jesus told Peter that before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me 3 times. Well, the rooster, I don't know what time. What time is it going to get up there, Josh?
It depends on the lights.
It depends on the lights in
there. Rooster crows all day and all night.
All day and all night. Early in the morning, right? Just as daybreak comes up, if you've got chickens outside and your sun isn't come up yet, it might be off in the distance, the light's starting to come, you'll start to hear. Probably about the time you hear birds start chirping. They still may be on their nest, but they're starting to chirp. So very early in the morning, this takes place. So I would imagine this is taking place somewhere in the time between midnight to 3 or 4 in the morning, which, by the way, is... As one preacher once said, the time between the 11 to 3 in the morning is Satan's world or Satan's realm. That's when he likes to roam. So if you want to spend time doing damage to Satan, that's the time you should pray. Well, how many of us get up at 11 to 3 in the morning praying? But I've heard one preacher say that one time, and I've often thought, man. Staying up at 3 in the morning praying, what do I do? I mean, that's a long time to pray in that round. But, you know, just thinking about that. But obviously this is taking place I have to imagine that's what it is, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that too.
So did their day start at 6 o'clock, started the evening before?
Well, that's when God's day starts. Isn't that what God said back in Genesis? The evening and the morning are the first day.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story about that. Do we have time to tell the story? Yeah, I have time to tell the story. Yeah. Yeah, 743, we have time to tell the story. I went to ALERT, which was a search and rescue school in the UP of Michigan. And on Saturday night, they would want us to fast. So they wanted us to try to fast one day a week. It was part of the thing. They didn't force you to fast, but that's what they asked, you know, fast. No dinner was served. You had your Saturday meal, and from 6 o'clock on till the Sunday night, 6 o'clock, there was no food served in the dormitory or to the cafeteria. There was no food made. So you had, if you wanted to eat and you didn't want to fast, you made sure you had either snacks or something like that from Walmart when you had break and you went out on leave. So we'd go to Walmart, and if we didn't want to fast, we would go and get Pizza Hut. And at Pizza Hut, you could buy an extra pizza. And our rooms were, you know, you didn't have a refrigerator or something, but you can leave pizza out overnight and eat it cold the next day. So if you didn't want to fast, you would get an extra pizza and take it back with you so you had it. Saturday was leave day when you would go into town to do that. So there were often times where, well, I'm not fasting today, and I'm getting me a pizza. And but they would do that. They based it off of that evening and the morning of the first day. So you, from 6 o'clock to the next morning, that's how they did that. Well, I don't know if God said when's evening is. Is 6 o'clock evening, or is it when it gets dark outside? You don't know that. But it is, that's how God views it. So, yeah. I don't know if that answers your question. That might have been a long story, or just a crazy story to tell you about that, but I also told you, what did it tell you about my heart? Was I hungry? Oh, I don't think so. It wasn't about the hungry. My heart was rebellious at that time. I ain't telling me what to do. All right, 55 through 59. Let's see what happens. So you have this false testimony, they can't find any evidence, so they make up stuff. Why would they make up stuff about Jesus? I mean, what was their whole reason? Why were they mad at Jesus enough to want to kill him? I mean, Jesus didn't do anything to them, did he?
Oh, you mean to the Sadducees?
Yeah, what?
It's a threat to their power.
Oh, right. You hit it right on the head. Yes, sir. They didn't win by... Jesus was the promised Messiah, and he was going to... What did he often call them? What's that?
Whitewash
sepulchers, which is basically saying you're a big, fat hypocrite. On the outside, you look just like you're perfect and pristine, but deep down inside, look what you're doing. That's what he exposed them. What else was he exposing about them? That they were what? It's something they refused to admit. They thought they were right with God, but they were sinners. Yeah, Jesus was exposing that, hey, you are a sinner, and they refused to admit it. So, yeah.
Because they thought they were doing all their things from the Old Testament the way they treated God.
Yeah. And because I do those things, I'm right before God,
right.
Whether my heart is in it or not. Yeah. This is found in Psalms 27:12. I'll read it. This is a fulfilling of that prophecy. This part here where they were going to make them look false teaching. 27:12 says this. Do not let me fall into their hands, for they accuse me of things I have never done. With every breath they threaten me with violence. A prophecy, I think it'll, yeah. I was hoping the sheet would come up there. You have that. Verse 57 says, finally some men took and gave false testimony. We heard him say, I will destroy this temple with human hand, made with human hands in 3 days, and I will build another made without human hands. Now, what was Jesus really referring to there?
Himself.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on a second. I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without human hands.
He's talking about him.
Well, was Jesus made with human hands?
That's not the original thing. They twisted it.
Oh,
it says
okay.
It's a false testimony.
Okay, okay. Oh, what in the world?
Power source here.
Power source? That's not good. So Jesus was referring to what?
What was he going to destroy? Who's he going to destroy?
Did he use the word destroy?
Well, I'm reading the verse here. We heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days I will build another made with human hands.
Well, he meant he was going to die.
Yeah.
And his body was going to rise. He's going to raise up his body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, hold that thought for a little bit. We'll come back to that. When they said this, well, let's read verse 60 through 62.
And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, do you answer nothing? What is it that these men testify against you? But he kept silent and answered nothing. Again, the high priest asked him, saying to him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? Jesus said, I am, and you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven.
Ooh, so you have this thing where you're being accused. Now, how many of you have ever been accused of something? And don't share it if you have. But you've been accused of something where someone brings you into a room with someone else and starts just to lay it out there. And I mean, you're just getting blasted. And you sit there and say nothing. Have you ever done that? Oh, you've never been brought in where someone blasts you about something? Okay. Exactly, that's what we do, right? When something happens, wait a minute, that's not me, you're lying, that's a blatant lie, blah, blah, whatever, I mean. And Jesus just stands there, all these accusations, and he doesn't say one word. Now, there's an old verse in the Proverbs, I think Jesus might have been thinking about, or I don't know. Plus, he didn't need to answer their things because he knew they were false about him. But a slow answer turns away wrath, but grievous words, or that's the way it says in the King James, stir up strife. That's the way I remember memorized as a kid. So whenever someone starts yelling at me at work or customers start having an issue or problems when I'm dealing with them, try to remember that verse to just stand there and listen to them and be quiet. Because a lot of times that just pacifies the situation right off the bat. If I start opening my mouth up, the more I speak, the more agitated they get. I don't know if that's what Jesus was trying to do here, but Jesus says nothing. And he says, they said unto him, are you the Messiah? They ask him the question. And then Jesus says in verse 62, and we'll read it again. Jesus said, I am, and you will see the Son of Man seated in the place of power at God's right hand, coming on the clouds of heaven. When he says that, what was Jesus saying when he said that I am? What was he saying to them about himself?
That he's God.
That he's God, and he is. You sure he's saying that he's God, or is he saying I'm the Son of God?
I am. God
well,
is I am, right?
I am the Son of God.
Okay. Yes. Now remember, you have to have the God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. You have the three in one. And he says they're going to sit next to the Father. He says you will see him seated in a place of power at God's right hand, which means that he's putting himself equal with his God the Father. Okay, he's saying, I am equal with God. I'm going to be sitting right next to him. How do you think that went over? We know the story of what happens here, but in their minds, they're looking at Jesus as just an ordinary man, right? Right. Just like you and I. It would be like you and I sitting there and saying to the judge, you will see me sitting next to the president in our context. You will see me sitting next to the president if I was brought in. Wait a minute, you don't know who you're talking to here. One day I'll be sitting next to the president and you will be. In their minds, that's how they're viewing Jesus. He is an ordinary man. They didn't believe what he said. Let's see what happens here after this. 63.
Then the high priest tore his clothing to show his horror and said, why do we need other witnesses? You have all heard his blasphemy. What is your verdict? Guilty, they all cried. He deserves to die.
Okay, so now he gets to the point where he rips his tunic open. I mean, just...
Right.
I heard his translation.
What's his translation?
Yeah.
Well, why would somebody get so angry about someone claiming to be God? No, I'm saying though. I mean, what's so big deal about
because
someone claiming
of the,
to be God?
The Old Testament, the Ten Commandments. There's no other God before me.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they're following the law.
Mm-hmm. And their understanding of the scriptures is that there is only one God. There is no other God but the great I am. And so when you say, I am God, and he physically looks like a man, you're blaspheming. You're saying, hey, you're putting yourself equal with God.
And they know the prophecy that he was...
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say. So what were they looking for?
Well, I was just going to say, evidently... As they were studying the scriptures and stuff, they missed out on the prophecies of
mm-hmm.
the scriptures because they would, if not, they would have seen it.
Mm-hmm. That would be Satan blinding their eyes, blinding the eyes of their heart, saying, "Hey, they would read. They probably read their scriptures all the time. They would have read those psalms
right.
and they would have heard that, but Satan had blinded their eyes." Now, not all of them were blinded. Nicodemus
right.
was one of those guys, and he was longing to know. Josephus, or Joseph of Arimathea, he was a very wealthy man who had a tomb where Jesus' then later body was buried into. Not everybody's heart was blinded.
But even Nicodemus was scared, wasn't he?
Oh, he was, yeah. Yeah, he came to visit Jesus at night, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean...
You know, one funny thing I learned a long time ago, they had a funny stitch in their clothing, so it was almost like Velcro, like it was made to be torn apart.
No, really?
I had that in a Sunday school once. So, like, whenever they tore their clothes, they had special stitching so it could come apart.
when we as kids growing up, you know, when you want to pretend you were a strong person, so you slipped your shirt a little bit and then you so you could have a little head start. Yeah.
I could see that because clothing was all handmade back then. You just don't want to go ripping and tearing or stuff.
Right.
If you do that, you're gonna make it so it'll tear and then you can just stitch it back up, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, verse 65 says this. After that, they all began to yell guilty. And it says, then some of them began to spit at him, and they blindfolded him and beat him with their fists, yelling at him, prophesy to us, they jeered at him. and the guards slapped him as they took him away. I mean, this wasn't an easy or pretty, you know, quick thing to, you know, he said it. They all said he was guilty. And what did they begin to do? Yeah, they began to beat him. Why would they blindfold him?
Were they trying to get him to see if he could, if he would prophesy who was in?
Yeah, I mean, oh, well, if you say you're God, God knows everything, so we're going to blindfold you and then come up on John, I'm going to blindfold you and then I'm going to pick somebody in here to come punch you in the face. And then you tell me who hit you. Now, you might be able to pick out one of us because, you know, depending on how bad the punch is. But that's what they were doing. Now, you tell me who punched you, John. Jesus didn't give in, though, did he? I want to read to you from Isaiah 50, verse 6. Isaiah 56. I offered my back to those who beat me and my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mockery or spitting. Because the Sovereign Lord helps me and I will not be disgraced. Therefore, I have set my face like a stone and determined to do His will. And I know that I will not be put to shame. Jesus fulfilled the prophecy of being struck and spit. Here's your prophecy of being struck and struck and spit on. We have a wonderful Savior who took all that. Took it all. 15 verse 1. Let's continue reading.
Immediately in the morning, the chief priest held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus, led him away, and delivered him to Pilate.
Okay, so you have this picture here early in the morning. Again, we just skipped the story of Peter and his denial. Okay, so the verses we just skipped over was Peter denying the rooster crowing. So it's very early in the morning. Again, we don't know how early. Around the time that the rooster crowed, obviously. They take him to the high priests and they began to lead off. And they took him to Pilate. Who was the Roman governor of the area. Verse 2 says this, and Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus replied, "You have said it." Wait a minute. Did I get that wrong? The question was, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus replied, "You have said it." Why would he say, "You have said it"?
Like, if you say so, or no?
Well, he was asking him a question. How's all the translations word that? Same way?
Yes, it is as you say.
Okay? As you say. Huh? Oh, he's affirming it. Okay? Jesus is affirming it. And notice that Jesus' response is always to the truth. He never responds to false accusations. Jesus goes quiet to anything that is false, but when it comes down to the truth, Jesus answers. I find it very interesting. 3-5. Someone want to read that one?
And the chief priests began to accuse him of many things. Then Pilate questioned him again. "Are you not answering anything? Look how many things they are accusing you of." But Jesus still did not answer anything, so Pilate was amazed.
Okay. He was silent. Again, nothing there. I'm going to flip over and read Isaiah 53. There's another prophecy that's in the would have been from the prophets. Isaiah 53, verse 7 says this. Oops. He was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as sheep is silent before the shears, he did not open his mouth. Unjustly condemned, he was led away. No one cared that he died without descendants. Huh? Without descendants.
Children.
Mm-hmm. Pilate asked the Jews who they wanted him to release after this. he begins to cry, the crowd begins to cry out, and he says this in verse 6. Now, it was the custom of the governor's custom each year during the Passover celebration to release one prisoner at the one of the prisoners, anyone the people would request. Okay, so he would grant a someone who was a prisoner that was going to be, he would let him go free, give him a pardon. One of the prisoners at that time was Barabbas. He was a revolutionary guy that he had killed somebody in an uprising. The crowd went to Pilate and asked him to release a prisoner as usual. Okay. Pilate said, "Would you like me to release to you the king of the Jews?" For he realized now that the leading priests had arrested Jesus out of envy. So Pilate saw their motive. Okay, and so he thinks, "Well, why don't you let me release the king of the Jews to you?" At this point, the leading priests stirred up the crowd to demand the release of Barabbas instead of Jesus. So you have this thing, this tradition of over the Passover time, the Romans would pacify them by letting one of their people go free, you know, they had arrested. I can just picture the crowd outside, Pilate's greeting them, and all of a sudden these leading priests start walking through them, and we want Barabbas loose. Come on, we know we want Barabbas. And somebody in the crowd starts shouting, "Barabbas, Barabbas," and then the crowd just joins in. Kind of like today, you know, you can get something started in a whole stadium by just going over to someone and saying, "Hey, yeah." And about 10 minutes later, you might have the whole section, and then pretty soon the whole stadium is yelling, either at each other or with each other. I mean, it's not hard to start a thing when you got a crowd. And during the Passover, this is a time some of these people might have been pretty well lit up from partying from the Feast of the Passover, you know. So they might have been, some of them might have been drunk. You don't know. It could have, you know, it's not hard to get people riled up when there's stuff going on. 12 through 14, let's see what he says, what happens.
"And Pilate answered and said again unto them, What will ye then that I should do unto him whom ye call the King of the Jews? And they cried out again, Crucify him. Then Pilate said unto them, Why? What evil have you done? And they cried out the more exceedingly, Crucify him. Read the next one.
Yeah, you might as well read the next
Pilate,
one.
Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified."
So you have this thing. Crucifixion was extremely cruel. It was the Romans, it was a horrific. If you watch the movie The Passion, you can see a glimpse into what crucifixion really was like, although that doesn't do it real justice. The Romans had the art of being able to know exactly where to put your... oftentimes you see pictures of the nails going through here. But the Romans, they knew exactly where to put that nail through this part of your hand without killing you, hitting the major artery that goes through here. And yet that part, when you hurt this, if you've ever hit this part of your hand, it hurts, it throbs, your pulse is in there. There's a blood's pumping through it, but they knew how to do that. So they had this art down to where they would do that.
And it was commonplace.
You were nailed naked. You were not dressed or clothed when you were nailed that way. It was a very humiliating way to die. Not only were you done, it was done outside the city where every single person passed by. Anybody, travelers coming to the city, they saw you. And it was horrific. It's not one of these things where it's a very sad, bad way to die. It was also looked down on. If you were crucified, you were the lowest of the low. I mean, you were bad. You were a very bad person.
When they flogged you, wasn't the whips? They had like pieces of glass and metal and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to that verse Did we just read verse 15? We read verse 15. Yeah, I had you read that one too.
But
yeah.
They contend that the crosses could also have been in an X form too, instead of a cross shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's different types of crosses that they would use. Yeah, the X form. Peter himself was nailed upside down. He specifically asked when he was martyred. He asked, I don't want to die like my Savior. Nail me upside down. So to be nailed upside down, what happens to the blood? Yeah. You don't die from, when you were on the cross, you did not die from, or at least this is what I'm told, I've never died on the cross, but in that sense, we die to ourselves on the cross, our own cross, the Bible says, but you know, things that we deal with, we die to that. But Jesus, you didn't die from loss of blood. Okay, you died from suffocation. Your body, your legs would eventually give out. And your weight would hang on it. And the way your body was, your chest cavity, eventually your muscles constricted and it just suffocated you. It was a slow, agonizing death. That's why oftentimes if you were hanging there for long periods of time and you lived, they would break your leg. Because if they broke your leg, you would crush. You would hang down, and then it just got worse and worse. Very constricting death. And that's why with Jesus, he could never have a broken bone, because he was the perfect sacrifice, going back to the lamb. So when they went with Jesus, instead of confirming that he was dead through breaking his leg and making sure that, they stuck a spear through his side. And then when water and blood poured out, they knew he had died after he had given up the ghost. We'll get to that part, I'm sure. But let me read to you some prophecies again about this part here. Isaiah 53:3 says this: "He was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, acquainted with deepest grief. We turned our backs on him and looked the other way. He was despised and we did not care." Again, going back to how the Jewish people there rejected him and they hated him. Psalm 69, verse 4 says this. Whoops. 69, verse 4. I had Psalms 49. That's not what I wanted. Psalm 69, verse 4 says this. "Those who hated me without cause outnumbered the hairs on my head. My enemies tried to destroy me with lies, demanding that I give back what I did not steal." These are prophecies about Jesus and his death. Let's read Mark 15:9-14. We just read that. Let's read 16-19. They got a typo there.
"And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium, and they called together the whole band, and they clothed him with purple and planted a crown of thorns and put it about his head and began to salute him, 'Hail, King of the Jews!' And they smote him on the head with a reed, and they stood upon him and, bowing their knees, worshipped him."
They basically mocked Jesus. When you think of a crown of thorns, what do you think about? What does thorns represent, by the way?
It represents the curse.
Yes, the curse. So they were mocking Jesus with a crown of thorns, the very thing that God cursed this world with. What did he tell Adam and Eve back in the garden? You're going to be toiling and it's sweat of your brow. And yeah. They were mocking Jesus with the very thing that God had put into this world through God had cursed the ground.
And they weren't like our thorns. They were big.
Yeah, I mean, that, there's often these pictures of, well, this is what the thorns would have looked like. You see that. Someday I'd love to have a ring of thorns like that, but they're so sharp you oftentimes can't hold them without wearing gloves.
Gloves or something to carry them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're very sharp.
They mocked him. They also put him on, why did they put purple on? Royalty, yeah. God's color. God's color is purple. It was worn by kings. They placed the thorn around. They walked around saluting him as if he was king. You know, whatever. I don't know how the Roman soldiers saluted. Maybe they were like this. I don't know. I only remember pictures. You know, you see movies, you know, and that's how they saluted. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. However their meaning was. Do you think the soldiers knew about the symbolic meaning of the thorns?
That was my question.
No, they did. They would not have known that. That would have been something that God would have told Adam and Eve in the garden. It would have been passed on. But unless the Roman soldiers studied the Jewish law or the law and the prophets, they wouldn't have known about that. They would have had no clue about that. But I find it very interesting that the thing that God used, God said, hey, you're going to, God cursed the ground, that was used to make fun of Jesus. One last verse here. We got verse 20. And then we'll finish out the thing. Verse 20, what happens next?
And when they had mocked him, they took the purple off him, put his own clothes on him, and led him out to crucify him.
So this is the last, for the next lesson deals with his crucifixion, his burying, and being raised from the dead. But this lesson here ends with this thing that when they were finally tired of mocking him, they took off the purple robe and put on his own clothes on him again. And then they led him away to be crucified. So not only, and again, when you have this, when you're whipped with those cat of nine tails like they would have used, it could be anything from metal to glass beads to pieces of sharp steel that were embedded into leather. Okay, that's what was used. And so when that was laid across a person's back, if you've ever had a walk through the woods and you've got thorns on and it sticks to your clothes and you're like, ooh, that hurts. So you gingerly pick it off because what happens is if you keep going, it just cuts and makes a mark, right? Scratch. Rose bushes. Get your hand in the rose bush, pull it out, you're going to get cut. Well, the cat o' nine tails would have shredded, and it wasn't like they stayed in one spot. They would rip. And when they did that, they took his clothes off. Then they put this purple on. So in the meantime, while they're mocking him, he's standing there. Of course, your body begins to react. When you cut something, it stops the bleeding, right? So that purple cloth would have started to soak up some of that blood that he would have been having, that is lost. When they rip that off again, now that reopens a wound, kind of when you bandage a wound and you rip it open, it hurts. Then they put his own clothes back on him. And then we'll get to next week's lesson where they make him carry the cross outside on top of that. So it was an extreme, crucial thing. I mean, as a kid growing up, we did studies in school on how much blood and that you can lose and still live. And then how much fluids that are in you. I still don't know, can't still figure out how Jesus was still living after went through.
Yeah.
Okay, and so the movie The Passion of the Christ probably depicts it the closest to anything that we've ever seen in our lifetime of what Jesus would have went through. It's the closest depiction. It's definitely one that you got to be careful what your kids see when you're young, but definitely a movie to... you know, the depiction of it.